I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Say my name.
Mike Florio.
Get the name right. That's all that matters. Spell my name right or say my name properly.
Pro Football Talk and NBC Sports.
Hearing Florio writing articles about it.
NFL Insider.
Take a spin around the league. We bring in Pro Football Talk's Mike Florio.
Mike Florio.
My name is my name.
With Bernstein and McKnight on 670 The Score.
Mike Florio is at Pro Football Talk on Twitter. He is on the Alpamonte Ford hotline. Alpamonte Ford, 500 new and used vehicles to choose from, and he joins the Bernstein and McKnight show. Mike, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you guys?
Great. Since we last talked, the NFL has finalized the challenge arrangements for pass interference. Take us through what the procedure is going to be and what we should expect.
Well, look, it depends upon whether or not Al Riveron received any blowback after he met with employees of NFL media last month to explain his interpretation of a couple of calls that he believes would have been overturned if replay review was available for pass interference last year, specifically a Week 15 play between the Chargers and the Chiefs, and then a Super Bowl 53 moment where Stephon Gilmore of the Patriots grabbed the arm of Brandon Cooks of the Rams and didn't really, as far as I can tell, clearly impede Cooks from trying to catch the football. The question is, will they be using replay review to overturn these calls frame by frame, slow motion, regardless of whether or not it's as blatant as it was in that Rams-Saints game that sparked all of this? That's what I don't know at this point. And one of the last arguments we made on this is the commissioner needs to get Al Riveron in a room, the two of them, sit down and have a blatant and blunt and candid conversation about when this power should be used, because for now it looks like they've overcorrected. If Al Riveron is going to apply the rule the way that he has explained it to the NFL media employees, then we're going to have a lot of delays, and we're going to have a lot of plays where the ruling on the field gets disrupted by Al Riveron determining that there wasn't interference, there was interference, and I think we're going to get a lot of offsetting fouls where that's going to be the ultimate mulligan. Well, they called pass interference on the defense, but you know what? There was a lot of hand fighting there, and I'll just call them on both guys and make it through the play over again. I have a feeling we're going to see a dramatic increase in those kinds of outcomes, and I frankly can't remember any time that the ruling on the field was both guys committed interference. We're going to see that a lot, unless somebody explains to Al Riveron that this should only be used when it is truly clear and obvious that there was a call that was missed.
Mike, is it possible they're just going to use the preseason to figure out what they couldn't figure out leading up to actual gameplay with this rule?
Well, we saw that last year with the helmet rule, that we knew by looking at the words on paper, if they apply this as written, there will be penalty after penalty after penalty. And there was the first 2 weeks of the preseason. So then they had an emergency meeting of the competition committee, and they announced, we have not changed the new helmet rule, and here are the changes to the new helmet rule. Yeah. And it all died down, and it wasn't much of a concern last season. So I think the same thing is going to happen this year, and I think the key is going to be making sure Al Riveron understands that's not enough to overturn it. It's got to be Nickell Robey-Coleman of the Rams blowing up Tommy Lee Lewis of the Saints and everyone saying, holy crap, they blew that call. It can't be, well, we took a surgical look at the pushing and the shoving and the grabbing and the tugging, and we've decided that the defensive back actually did pull his arm. And we can't have that. The sport can't have that. And, you know, because here's the thing. If the question is whether or not you get 2 feet down as you're going out of bounds when you catch a pass, that's undeniable. It's objective. You see the 2 feet. They're down or they're not down. The ball's either out or it's not before the runner's knee hits the ground. For something like pass interference, there's nothing objective about it. It's subjective. And I think that this power to slow the game down, to overturn the rulings that are made in real time, should only be used if it is truly, truly clear and obvious. And maybe that's what happens after a couple weeks of the preseason. That's what spurs the commissioner to save the NFL's 100 seed. And otherwise, it's going to be an issue all year long. And we've seen the NFL react. We saw it with roughing the passer last year after a couple of weeks. We saw it with the helmet rule early in the preseason. So that may be the way this progresses. They let Al apply it the way he thinks he should, and then they tell him, no, that's not the way it gets applied, and then everything settles down.
I wonder why I'm reading stories about the possibility that Rob Gronkowski's retirement could be a short one, and why, if it's coincidental that it's coming from multiple reporters, if he's saying something or if somebody's hearing something. The other thing is, when we've seen photographs of him, he does not look like he's at playing weight. It does not look like anything close to a football body right now. So it really wouldn't jibe with me if all of a sudden he's starting to get antsy and itchy to come play again. Wouldn't he be working out?
Well, two things. First, I recall vividly when Brett Favre visited with David Letterman in April of 2008, and he made a comment similar to the remark that Rob Gronkowski made to Rich Eisen last week, which is basically, once the game starts, I don't know how I'm going to feel. And that was the first moment I thought, holy crap, Favre's going to come back out of retirement. And he obviously did. With Gronkowski, I think once his friends are together, once he sees the Patriots on TV, once he sees the banner get raised for the sixth time, you know, he may start getting the itch. And then the question becomes, can he put his weight back on? Now, he says he's lost 18 pounds. I've been at the beach for 4 days. I'm about halfway there to gaining back his 18. So, you know, I don't think it takes all that long. If you're really committed, doesn't take all that long to gain your weight back. So I think he could get back to wherever he needs to be once he decides that that's what he's going to do. The question is, how does he feel when he sees his former teammates together again? And will he try to engineer something where he comes back late in the season? You can come back until right after week 13 before the door slams for good on an unretirement. And the other question is, that hasn't really been discussed, what will Bill Belichick do if Gronk decides he wants to come back? Because I can see Belichick taking the approach, hey, we don't have separate sets of rules here. You're the whistle from day one or you're not. You retired, we've moved on, and we're ready to go with who we have, no exceptions. Now, obviously, they're going to make an exception for anyone. It's going to be Gronk. But we still don't know that the Patriots are going to welcome him back with open arms if he does change his mind.
Reports out, Mike, that Cleveland Browns running back Duke Johnson has left his current agent and is now, well, I guess wouldn't be current, now had a former agent. Does this move mean Cleveland is any closer to trading him, or are they going to sit where Freddie Kitchens was and say, nah, this is, he's our guy and we're not moving him? Do they keep an unhappy player?
Now, it depends on who he hires to be his next agent and whether his next agent can have any more success in getting Duke Johnson what he wants. And you know, here's what he wants. It's not about 2018 because, I mean, for 2019, rather. They need him for 2019 because Kareem Hunt's going to be gone for half the year. He makes $1.8 million, Johnson does this year. But he's under contract for 2020 at $3.6 million. Well, the Browns aren't going to keep him at $3.6 million next year, so I think he wants to go somewhere. He wants to engineer something where he could be somewhere where he has a chance to make that money in 2020, where they're going to need him. They've made an investment in him. This guy's part of our future. For the Browns, he's part of their 2019 season, and after that, he's going to be gone. That's what he's concerned about. And, you know, what can the Browns do? Well, you can't force him to do anything. You just say, hey, the guy's under contract, he's here, and, you know, he's frustrated with his agent, so he's acting out, but I don't know that any agent could force the Browns to do something they just don't want to do. But, you know, maybe if they can find somebody who's got the relationships, who can pull favors, pull strings, come up with a creative idea to get the Browns a win out of this, that's what Duke Johnson's going to need, and there's no guarantee that even that is going to get the Browns to give in.
Have you been able to confirm some of these reports out of Washington right now that there are workers in the office at various levels on the business side and in the front office just leaving? They said maybe 40 people have resigned from their positions.
I just saw it this morning. I haven't really done anything to try to confirm it. I don't have any reason to doubt Chris Russell. I think he worked for Washington at one point as part of their in-house media operation, and 106.7 The Fan in D.C. is plugged in with what's happening there. None of this really surprises me. Bruce Allen, the president of the team, has been kind of a lightning rod for criticism. There have been questions about his leadership style. And I when I saw it, I wasn't surprised that that's happened. And you know, it's not going to make a whole lot of news if it's people on the business who are leaving one at a time over the course of 6 months or so, and the next thing you know, 40 are gone. And again, it's business side, not football side, but Bruce Allen's in charge of the business side, and you know, hey, ultimately it lands on the lap of owner Daniel Snyder, and he's continued to entrust the organization to Bruce Allen, and I think that he believes that Allen will use his political clout to eventually help Dan Snyder get a new stadium, and then after that, maybe that's when Dan Snyder moves on to someone else. But I think Bruce Allen is not going to be one of those people walking out the door anytime soon.
Mike, what does it mean to now have this new audio connected to Chiefs wideout Tyreek Hill? Apparently, and please correct me if I have any of the details of this wrong, in a recorded conversation with his then-girlfriend, Hill denied an incident that he later pleaded guilty to. Does this change the way the NFL has begun to investigate? Does this change the actual legal case against him?
I don't think it really changes anything. All this is the rest of the audio that we first heard that very menacing snippet of back in late April, just an hour before the draft began, where Hill says to Espinal, "You need to be terrified of me too," as they argue whether or not their three-year-old son respects Hill or is instead terrified of Hill. And, yeah, okay, so he denies it to her, and he doesn't know he's being recorded. Does that make it more credible? I don't know. I mean, the bottom line is he pleaded guilty to choking and beating her in 2014, and that's where it all stands. And, I mean, he got kicked out of Oklahoma State at the time, and he'd never publicly denied it. He's always taken responsibility for what he pleaded guilty to. There's never been a suggestion he didn't do it. So it's an oddity, right? It's a little something new as it relates to the case. I don't think it changes anything from the NFL's perspective. They're going to do what they're going to do. And, you know, we're going to find out whatever the decision is at some point before the start of the regular season.
If I give you a list of names and ask you what they have in common, I'd say it's Chris Carter, Bernie Kosar, Ahmad Brooks, Steve Walsh, Terrell Pryor, and Josh Gordon. Anything pop to mind immediately?
All taken in the supplemental draft.
Nicely done, Mr. Florio. And the reason I bring those names up is because the supplemental draft is here. What should fans know about it?
Here's what fans should know about it. It's not what it used to be, right? It's very rare that there's a guy who is out there that a team regards as good enough to give up next year's draft pick in the corresponding round. And that's how it works. If you make a guy a first-round pick in the supplemental draft, you forfeit next year's first-round pick and so on all the way down the line. And it's kind of a blind thing where you put in it before the round starts whether or not you want the guy, and then you've got a priority list. And nobody pays attention to the niceties anymore because rarely, if ever, is anyone drafted. There may be one or two guys this year. Frankly, I haven't been paying much attention to it because it's been so anticlimactic in recent years. Since Josh Gordon, there really hasn't been a significant name and a person who's ended up being a great player. And when they first started it, I mean, there were multiple guys, like, you know, first-round picks, second-round picks, and guys who went on to be great players. But I think now, I don't know whether the rules have gotten more difficult for guys to finagle a path to the supplemental draft, but it's just not, it's typically not the kind of talent that will get a team to give up that next year's first round or second round pick.
Mike, appreciate you as always. Great coming on.
All right, see you guys.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.